This is like a magician's wet dream, dude. Think about how many illusions you could pull off with this.
Yeah, you could just pass rabbits between it and impress like the Templetons. Lore Boys here. Three tourists heading out for a weekend picnic. My name is Peter I Can't Read O'Donohue, and I am joined by...
No, the map says we're on the corner of Crenshaw and 3rd Boulevard. I'm telling you, Jamie, okay?
Dude, I can't even read.
hey, Peter, I'm Ethan. Jamie got us lost again. He won't give me the compass. He tells me I have the map, so he deserves the compass, but he doesn't know how to use the compass.
I think the two of those tools work in tandem, but you need to know how to use both of them.
Yeah, I think the compass is confused because every time it just points in the same direction every time, no matter where I want to go.
not even north. It's like jammed against the glass. It's like a picture of a compass.
So, for a while, I did get away with just giving him a drawing of a compass that he was pretty happy with. But then he learned that I had the real compass, and now he's throwing a big fit. He doesn't understand. I tried to explain to him that a map and a compass is a lot like the keys that are used to activate nuclear armaments, but he just doesn't seem to get the metaphor.
You need two compasses at the same time to be able to go north. It's not safe.
I'm James Miller.
There you go.
Two compasses at the same time. Every man's fantasy.
So as I'm sure the listeners are aware, if they have checked the title, in this week 18 of my imprisonment in the listener request labor camp, we are covering the novel Roadside Picnic, written by Arkady and Boris Strugatsky in 1972.
Cool. Can I just say there's no way you've done 18 weeks of listener requests at this point? That seems wrong.
We're 18 weeks into the year, and 2021, I don't believe I've made any of my own decisions.
Oh, because you're not doing every week, right? You're doing every third week. Gotcha.
Yeah, see? They don't let me out of this, like, out of this room just because you guys are hosting. It's all virtual.
I thought it was, like, white-collar tax prison where you just had to show up on weekends or something. You
know? Oh, I get to podcast once a week and leave my cell, yeah. Right? Sure, you commit a tax fraud, but who cares?
Just about all of mine have been user like requests. I think Rayman wasn't, and sometimes when I get into the older games, but yeah. We're doing a better job of keeping on top of those.
We're committed.
Yeah, well, maybe finally the listeners are requesting the right things, huh? Maybe it's their fault this whole time.
It is their fault.
I agree, actually. You can always pay to be correct. So I did want to front load this. We're looking to make some changes to the old Patreon tiers just to increase value for, you know, the important ones. Not everybody on the Discord, but, you know, whatever. we were looking to add some behind-the-scenes material to the $15 tier. We still have the vast majority of all of our episode scripts. So if you pay $15 or more per month, we were thinking that you could request one of the scripts. And if we have it, we can just send you the script as is. Like I was telling the boys earlier, before we started recording, one of my favorite YouTubers does it and people seem to like that. So if you want to see the notes and like maybe correspond it to points in the episode, if that's something interesting, please let us know in the Prime Folks channel on the Discord. And if you're not in the Discord, it's loreboys.com/about to get into the Discord.
Yeah, I didn't know Ben Shapiro shared his scripts. That's your favorite YouTuber, right?
It is. It's his Word documents, just in, and it's just like whatever he's going to talk about, and then like inserted photos of just different women's feet. Unrelated too. I'm just waiting for him, like, you know, I just want to meet his sister, so I'm a, you know, top tier Shapiro subscriber.
Of course.
Yeah, on his Patreon or whatever.
You know he posts a lot of pictures of his sister's feet. For sure.
Yeah, oh yeah. Which I'm not really about, but you know, like, it's good enough.
Yeah. You know, if you ever got the chance to be with Abby Shapiro, she would insist that Ben watched, right? Would you be okay with that, Peter?
I'd probably be more okay with that than doing it without her.
That's right. Put it in her P word.
Yeah. No, wait, sister, we have to stop. It's looking all wet. That can't be healthy. My wife said that's not healthy.
You made her sick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little man speaking so quickly in the corner of the room. Yeah.
Would that get distracting?
Oh, yeah, dude. The facts and logic that he'd be spewing out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, give it to her, Snowflake.
Oh, Christ. Anyway, speaking of siblings, actually, Arkady and Boris Strugatsky were born in the Soviet Union in 1925 and 1933, respectively, the golden age of the Soviet Union, the Stalin era, you know. The Strugatsky brothers wrote dozens of novels, some of which actually take place in a shared universe set in the 22nd century called The World of Noon. Roadside Picnic is not part of that shared universe. I did not look into it.
Okay.
The topic of today's episode also coined the term stalker when referring to urban or industrial tourists.
Wait, is that a word for urban or industrial tourists? A stalker?
I don't know if it's specific to Russia, but like people who go to abandoned buildings and whatnot to like that kind of tourism, like old warehouses, old abandoned buildings and whatnot, the term now since the 70s has been stalker. So coincidentally, in the same way that Heinlein in my Starship Troopers episode coined Space Marine, this is where the term stalker comes from, if you've ever heard that referred to in urban exploration.
Yeah, have you ever watched those urban exploration videos? They're so cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, I have restraining orders against multiple old buildings, so I know all.
Like people going to like old subway stops that have been it's like a museum of the past. It's just like completely abandoned stuff.
So Jamie and I climbed into an abandoned building by the metro one night, and we're just like looking around, and I see this drawing, like a pencil drawing of a tiger.
I still have it
on the ground, and I gave it to him. I was like, oh, look what I found or whatever. Then we walk into the next room, and it was like a graffiti mural that somebody did, and that was clearly like the sketch that they had brought with them.
But, yeah. I wonder if the same building, because I was just about to go into a quick aside about like Dara and I broke into an abandoned building here in Montreal.
It's
like
right beside Lucien Lallier.
So I had to climb a tree to get into the window. I remember I stopped to tie my shoes, and we were a little drunk. And I looked up, and there was like a perfect tree leading up to an open window on a summer day. We had to get into it.
Yeah, we were also like fairly drunk, but we actually managed to get in like one of the doors. So like the fence had like been pushed down, and we managed to like just kind of get through off to the side and get in that way.
I thought we were going to wake up a hibernating hobo for sure and be chased out like from its den.
Careful, they're dangerous when they're protecting their eggs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Spits black tar on your face. Like.
Empty 40 bottles clanging from its like running through them.
So we've all done a little our share of urban stalkering in the past here at the same building, of course, but perfect. Other books that they wrote when translated into English actually sound like they could exist in other media. So Land of Crimson Clouds sounds like a Netflix documentary about a white guy from California on some kind of spiritual journey.
Sure.
Right. Hard to Be a God does sound like a Disney Channel show about teenage gods in high school.
I was going to say Kanye West biography, but...
Oh, still good. I mean, as long as it's any media that isn't Russian sci-fi, right? The Kid from Hell is very clearly just a Goosebumps novel.
Yeah, R.L. Stein.
See, I love Goosebumps.
And then Beetle in an Anthill is about sodomy.
Yeah, of course.
Beetle in an Anthill. Sounds like it's too big to fit in the hole.
Oh!
Yeah, what it is, it's actually just like an engineering novel about holes.
Yeah.
Wow, by Louis Sachar.
Is that like the book Holes?
Yeah, who wrote that, actually? That's a name that just came reflexively to my head.
Jamie, pull up the clip.
I'm on it. Okay.
Yeah, cut me off with some trivia at some point. Roadside Picnic was nominated for the John...
Can I just say, I tried to type Holes novel, but I accidentally wrote Hoyle's novel, and it came up Dynamics of Engineered Artificial Membranes and Biosensors by William Hoyles. I'll assume that's not what we're looking for. It is Louis Sachar.
Hell yeah, bro.
Yeah, very good. I liked that movie and that book when I was in high school.
I remember that the guy, the main character's name was spelled forward the same as backward. Stanley Yelnats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Hiding in the shadows.
Roadside Picnic was nominated for the John W. Campbell Award in 1978 and won second place, beaten by Frederick Pohl's Gateway, which is a book I've never heard of, but beating out Philip K. Dick's bronze medal story, A Scanner Darkly.
Oh, wow. The Keanu Reeves movie.
Yes. So Roadside Picnic is going to be the B-plus novella for our B-plus podcastella.
What's the movie about with Keanu Reeves?
I've never seen it, but I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Is that the half-animated one with all the bugs everywhere?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it. It was
crazy. I was going to say, when you asked, I was like, I thought Jamie was the one who recommended it to me, but if he's asking, then who's driving the car?
I caught it on TV back when you had to like tune in at a specific time to watch a movie, and I saw it like I got 20 minutes in and then I stayed for the rest of it, so I haven't fully seen it, but it was good.
Nice.
I haven't seen it. So John W. Campbell, the man this award is named after, wrote Who Goes There, which would later be adapted into the films The Thing from Another World, and more importantly for me, because it's one of my favorite films, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, cool.
Roadside Picnic, or Roddy Picks, as I call him, has been adapted a few times over the years. Once in 1977, but something about the adaptation was disliked by the strong and confident Soviet censors, so every single copy has been destroyed.
Damn, okay. Dude.
Yeah.
Did you guys know, this is a fun fact about censorship. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon recently, and I looked up...
I've been listening to a lot of Ben Shapiro recently. He's very concerned.
He wants to catch them all. All them dry pussies. all them feet pics. Pokemon, there's like a number of like banned episodes or whatever. And there's one where he goes to the Safari Zone. And it's banned because the Safari Zone masked like park ranger holds a gun to Ash Ketchum's head. It aired once in Japan, and then like every other region, like 4Kids was just like, yeah, we're not gonna put that in there, because he also like shoots the gun at like Jesse and James and Meowth for a while. But then it's Ash has 30 Tauros later on in the series, but you never find out where the fuck he got 30 Tauros, because it's from the Safari Zone episode. So
isn't there a banned one where, well, Jesse obviously, but also James has titties, and they both have wearing the bikini?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's banned, but I've seen that picture.
Yeah,
it's hard not to.
I saw that picture on Ben Shapiro's laptop. Don't you worry.
There is also one that was legitimately banned and was parodied by The Simpsons that just like had a bunch of flashing lights and gave a bunch of kids in Japan seizures.
Yeah, that's an episode with Porygon in it. I know that one. They go to like cyberspace to ride Porygon.
Yeah,
and he, gives kids seizures by accident.
Porygon used epilepsy. It's super effective.
So following the destruction of the adaptation from 1977, in 1979, the Russian director Andrei Tarkovsky loosely adapted the film into the film Stalker. Loosely adapted the book into the film Stalker, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Strugatsky's actually wrote the screenplay for this movie.
Okay. You love to see that.
Yeah, when they actually like work together. I know the author of the Metro series that got adapted into the video games canceled. He like pulled the plug on the film adaptation because he was working on it with like Paramount or something, and they were just butchering it. So he was like, "Okay, if you guys aren't going to do this, then we're not doing it at all."
Good for him. Fuck.
Yeah,
it's a good book too. I read 2033. I haven't read any of his other stuff, but I read 2033.
Yeah, that's one of the things I want to get into one day for reading. Work on. Audiobooks, let's be real.
Audiobooks, they're like podcasts, but longer.
Yeah. I watched most of the film Stalker, but the legit version that I had acquired legitimately didn't have subtitles and is over 160 minutes long. And it's just not in English. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. The adaptation is like close enough that I kind of get the setup, but ultimately I don't know who any of the characters are supposed to be, because they like nothing's the same. Also, the next time I cover a book audio wise I'm gonna have to listen to it at home and take notes, because my drive to work is not long enough, so I listen to this book in like 30 12 minute chunks. By the time I was writing this script, I'm like, who the fuck is the main character? Like, I gotta remember anything.
save money, I just buy the books and then I type them out completely. And then I have Microsoft Sam or Microsoft Brian read them to me.
Yeah. Okay.
And that way I don't really feel like I've missed it because I've typed out the whole book ahead of time. So I kind of remember what's happening.
I'll type I'll type out books in paragraph long snippets, and I'll donate 100 bits at a time to my favorite Twitch streamers and have it read out on stream. So everyone can share in it. It's kind of like bootlegging, if you will.
Yeah.
Pretty badass.
And the hot tub streamers love it because you get all those donos. They say your name a bunch of times. It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm. So for the gamers, these is the farthest people from reading, so they definitely don't know that this is based on a book. For the gamers, an even looser adaptation of Roadside Picnic was made by GSC Game World in 2007 and released for PC. This is the game Stalker: Shadow of Chernobyl, which people may have heard of.
I mean, it does sound familiar, but I got nothing when I'm pulling it up.
Yeah. Originally, this episode was going to be a comparison between the game and the book, but the book I really, really enjoyed and made the loose adaptation of the game's plot seem really fucking boring by comparison, so I just didn't play it. Because it converted me into a fanboy over the course of the audiobook, where I was just like, well, if they're not going to do it right, I'm not going to play it, like, sort of thing.
I was mixing it up with Fear, because they both do that thing where they put a period after every single letter in the title.
Acronyms.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. What does Stalker stand for? Like,
oh, so Stalker in the book is not an acronym. It's right. Just slang. Jamie, pull up the clip. It
scavengers, scavengers, trespassers, adventurers, loners, killers, explorers, and robbers.
Okay, so the type of people who go into
Stalkers.
Jeez, well, like, cops and robbers, you just had to go and make it complicated, huh?
So I also, one of the other things that played into my decision to not play the game was when I found out when the book was written, because the book predates the Chernobyl disaster that, like, we're all familiar with, and it was interesting to read something from a point in Soviet history that isn't just, like, implanted into my, like, 90s pop culture brain as a child. Yeah. Like, the Soviet Union in my head exists in World War II, sometime in the 50s during the Cold War, and then Chernobyl, but otherwise, like, all the other history is totally absent from, like,
I love that you say zeitgeist. I love that you say in the 50s in the Cold War, when it, like, kicked off in the 50s and lasted for 40 years almost. Like,
yeah, but the Cold War exists perpetually in my brain just in the 50s.
Okay, yeah. I always have it as, like, an 80s thing, like Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall.
Oh, yeah.
In my head.
Kind of winding now, but again, it's like the Soviet Union exists as, like, this distant, like, almost fantastical thing in my head sometimes. So, like, having something between the anchor points in history in the 70s, I thought was really neat. So I was just like, bah, fuck this. Shadow of Chernobyl, it's like you're just boringifying it more than anything. So the novel takes place in an unknown year. However, it seems to be set in the future, at least from the perspective of the 1970s. And the entire novel takes place over the course of 8 years, separated into several sections. That being said, it likely all takes place before 1999. Section zero is an excerpt from a radio interview, and section one is written in the first person. The rest are all written in the third person. So there's, like, kind of three formats, there's five sections total, so zero to four.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first person's Call of Duty, third person as in Fortnite.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Four is RTS. It's much harder to read. My APM is too low.
The F in Stalkers is for flossing.
Sure.
Mark,
yeah, they go
told
the
me
to get, like, they go into the zone to get, like, epic emotes more than anything. Risking their lives for the setting of the novel is a town called Harmont and its surrounding area. Harmont is assumed to exist somewhere in Canada. And, like, lore boys canon, just from what I know about the topography of Canada, it's probably somewhere in central or northern Ontario. Just based on the environment that's described within the novel.
Okay, can I ask, like, what environmentally describing words would you use to describe Northern Ontario?
Yeah, like, one character is just like, how far is Thunder Bay?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's about a half day's drive there, stranger.
Basically, it's kind of the like mixed forests of like alpine and leafy trees, the weather that's described generally as well, and the kind of landscape of the zone that's a little bit marshy in some parts.
If you were driving like horizontally across Canada, like roll the dice, it's a pretty good chance you might be in Ontario. It's a wide one.
It is the widest one.
Yeah.
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 So it's the widest one by a wide margin.
What is the tallest province? Is it Quebec or Nunavut?
Oh, maybe Nunavut with like Baffin Island and everything up there.
Yeah. Quebec really strikes me as the type to wear platform shoes, so. Yeah.
But the goldfish inside are long dead.
Little referendum fish from the 60s. Like,
yeah. Bones. Yeah, yeah. I dyed my goldfish bleu et blanc and they died. Yeah.
Kill them immediately. Anyway, so that's Lore Boys canon. Is like in my head, I was imagining it in Ontario. Because there's a bunch of international names within the novel, none of which are French. So it's not Northern Quebec.
Sure, sure.
Right. Not a bit to be Temiscamingue, guys. It's not there.
No.
Does it, if it has the color and then object formula, then it might be somewhere in the territories, like yellow knife, white horse.
Yeah.
It's just color than object, and then it's in the
Iqaluit.
none have it, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a habit,
but not no French names, so they're all guys. There's no geese. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. Aucun gui.
Thankfully. Aucun crest de gui. I got you.
If you read the book with the same like Wikipedia pre-read poison that I had, you might come to the same conclusion, because there's a lot of places that kind of have similar landscape to Ontario, like places in Eastern Europe, even Northern Quebec, some parts of the States definitely, but it's just like assumed to be in Canada, so I kind of went into it with that and then went from there. So
yeah, I mean, you did kind of describe the boreal shield, which is pretty big, but
yeah.
There's a place I know in Ontario where the robbers, adventurers, something.
Scavengers, travelers, adventurers, looters, killers, escape artists.
They're all going in to get the belugas out.
I can see why they went with Stalker, because if you say them all out loud, it doesn't really...
It's a mouthful. It is a mouthful, yeah.
So at some point in the 20th century, 6 locations on Earth were briefly visited by space aliens of unknown origin. They then disappeared from our planet within 12 to 24 hours, leaving behind what we understand as bits and pieces of miraculous garbage. Beyond the luxury of Ontario, visits were also confirmed to have happened in Western Siberia, Uganda, and the South Atlantic. Don't know if it was an island or like... the coast of South America or whatever. It's just described as the South Atlantic. And then 2 go undescribed. So that's the 4 total.
Wow.
The scientist who won the, in quotes, 19-something Nobel Prize in Physics was Dr. Valentine Pillman. This is the excerpt from his interview where it is referred to as 19-something. So that's how we kind of know it's the latter half of the century after the 70s that he won his Nobel Prize.
Not even the latter half. It's the latter 10th.
Yeah.
He sounds like an ecstasy dealer. Valentine Pillman.
Yeah. Did you get your Valentine pills? I have them for you, my friend. I won Nobel Prize for this. Hmm?
So sweaty and like jawing constantly during his interview. Yeah. We were going to do it on TV, but he was making people nervous.
Do you have any gum?
We don't talk enough. I'm going to call you more.
Yeah, yeah. We should start a podcast, my friend.
Last time I fell for that fucking trick. He was credited with the discovery of the Pillman radiant, despite the fact it had been discovered by a schoolboy and was first written about by a college student. He openly laments on the radio the fact that you never know who is going to get credit for a discovery.
Welcome to academia, bitch.
Yeah. I'll explain what the radiant is shortly. During the Harmont radio interview, Pillman compares the six visitation locations to someone firing six bullets at our spinning planet, along what is called the Earth-Deneb line. I'm sure you guys could both define the Earth-Deneb line for me
right
now.
It's like a line from us to Deneb or from Sol to Deneb?
Jamie?
What's a Deneb?
Deneb is a star. It's a star in the Cygnus constellation.
It is, exactly. It is the primary or alpha star. It's the Chad star of the Swan.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, if the Deneb was me and the globe was the Earth, and I'm throwing, like, chewing gum and where it sticks onto the globe, that's kind of, like, how it got to us because it was spinning and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the spinning gum, or the spinning gum, the chewing gum would be slightly smeared by this rotation of the Earth.
Yes, and the Earth is being at an angle is why they're kind of offset in a strange direction. Mm-hmm. Pillman explained that the Pillman Radiant is the point in space from where the shots were fired. Ethan knew already, Deneb is the main star of the Cygnus constellation and is 2,616 light years from Earth. Once again, for our more primitive listeners, that is 9.3345391 to the exponent 34 football field.
Because that'll be... That's easier to digest.
Yeah,
for sure.
Totally. Yeah. You couldn't even give us a times 10 to the something, huh? You just had to the 34.
That's the exponent 34.
Those are easy exponents to handle for sure.
Yeah.
It's never officially said in the novel, but it would be kind of like his own lore boys canon that Valentine is suggesting that the visitors came from a planet or planets somewhere between Deneb and Earth. The visit in these six locations lasted about a day, like I said. The people in areas, so like not all the areas were inhabited. The one in the South Atlantic didn't seem to affect anybody. Whether there was like a city in Uganda that was visited. Harmont is not directly visited. The visit occurs outside of the town, but like different people had been like were within a visitation zone when the aliens came and went. People in the areas reported strange conditions during and after the visits. In an area now called the First Blind Quarter, people said that a loud sound rendered them blind, but not deaf. There was also the Plague Quarter and the Second Blind Quarter. Scientists were predictably baffled by this result, how the loud sound took people's sight and not their hearing.
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher. My best guess would be, because like sound is... vibration of the air, so kind of like the brown note, you know, where if you play the perfect note you will make somebody shit their pants.
There
exists a note that will do that. You find the note that will detach your optic nerve from your brainstem, essentially, right?
And somehow not rattle the bones in your ears to pieces.
Like, well, yeah, because it's that's the thing about finding the perfect pitch, right? Like the brown note also doesn't rattle your bones to pieces. Just
like when you're driving at a certain speed and your window starts, everything vibrates at a certain frequency, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
You drive fast enough and your wine glasses all explode. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you shit in a wine glass and it's going to break. That's just physics, you know?
That's the brown note.
That's the brown note for you.
I love the idea of truckers having to have different lanes because they have to drive at different speeds or else all their cargo will explode.
Yeah. Just can't hit this. That was the whole premise of the movie Speed, was the bomb was just rigged to blow up at a certain vibration, which occurs at 55 miles an hour.
It was just a crystal decanter. That was one of the other effects other than, you know, rendering people blind with the brown note or smashing all their wine glasses, the dead in cemeteries within or near visitation zones were raised and began just returning to their homes. They aren't decayed or dangerous like stereotypical zombies. They kind of just return to their families. They aren't really seemingly aware of what the fuck is going on, and they barely communicate, but they're kind of like their own memory, I guess. They kind of act out very simple tasks that they would have done in life, kind of clumsily. So,
sure. Just like after a long day of work, right? You kind of like a zombie, make your way home. Yeah. You make dinner. You're not even aware of what's going on.
Just all
my dad, who's been dead for 10 years, just walked into the house one day, immediately took off his pants and got into his PJs. I don't understand.
I mean, I knew Fox News was brainless, but he's been watching it for hours.
to ensure the safety of people outside of the zones, the International Institute for Extraterrestrial Cultures was started after local armies rolled out to ensure the zones were all walled off and quarantined. The institute became dedicated to collecting and studying what are formally called artifacts. This is the kind of miraculous garbage that is left behind. One of the characters in the book, Mr. Noonan, is like talking to someone about like the concept of what it is. The reason it's called Roadside Picnic is that is what we understand the visits to be. They just kind of stopped by and left. So the way he explains it to the other character is that imagine you go and have a picnic in the forest and the animals in the woods that are too simple to understand what's going on are just terrified by all the noise. And then when you leave and leave behind garbage, these things that they don't understand like might as well be magical.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
It's like they showed up looking for intelligent life, landed in Northern Ontario, and we're like, well, there's nothing. Decided to leave.
One, just like one Ontario guy walked up to him looking for picnic baskets, and then he was immediately dissolved.
I watched a YouTube video where this guy kept bringing different types of pizzas out to the forest and left them in front of a camera and see like what animals would eat what types of pizzas.
happens twice.
The frozen kind that you could cook it yourself at home got eaten before the Domino's one, like every single time. Like they'd sniff the Domino's and go to the other one.
Oh yeah.
Did he cook the frozen one?
Yeah, he cooked the frozen one, brought it out to the. And then he bought like a really expensive one, and I think they still like the frozen one. But I can't remember now.
Huh.
Interesting. That is fucking. That is fascinating. That full stopped all brain processes towards Roadside Picnic for me.
Yeah.
I was just like, why do the deers and the raccoons prefer the frozen Mr.
If I was a pizza manufacturer, I would be like deer endorsed frozen pizza. It'd be so cute. Can you?
That's your commercial. Yeah. It's right? Them skipping over the Domino's, skipping over the whatever you have it.
Guys, I've taken a few marketing courses. You don't want to present your pizza as garbage fit for animals. I'll say that. Okay? You don't want to present your product like that. It's not a good light.
I mean, like, Domino's pizza is left, like, uneaten even when abandoned in the wilderness is a bad review.
Domino's. So bad a raccoon won't eat it.
I've seen those things eat paper bags. Some of the artifacts appear to have beneficial effects, like what is called the so-so, and you can just do the hand motion at the same time, just like rock your hand back and forth.
Sure.
It's kind of a black rod, and it seems to be some kind of infinite battery. The issue is it's quite small, so they're trying to find like ways to adapt it into more like industrial uses to stop burning fuel and whatnot.
I mean, an infinite battery.
Yeah, it's pretty
like
good.
An infinite double A, I guess. It's just like it doesn't produce enough.
Not even. It'd be like an infinite D battery. So it's like, wow, I can drive my remote controlled monster truck for the next quintillion years. Thank God.
But it won't even fit into my Game Boy.
Yeah. It just like never decays, I guess. Then because like infinite implies you could just pull as much power as you want from it, but as it's more like everlasting battery, or you know.
That part's not detailed. Like the main characters tend not to be scientists in this. The so-so is described as an infinite battery, just like the bracelets are discovered by accident to be these little rings that just are perpetual motion. They spin forever.
When we open the universe of the infinite kittens, like they came out at a fixed rate, right? Yeah. You couldn't access all the kittens at once, but they would come out forever and ever.
Yeah.
The bracelet's perpetual motion is discovered by accident when one is being sold to like an artifact dealer. He just like kind of takes it out and starts fucking with it, like just twirling it on his finger, and then it just kind of
like all dealers in
forever.
Like all dealers in priceless artifacts, they're known to just pick up ancient pottery and just spin it around on their finger.
Yeah.
What do you say? This is a priceless leftover of a visiting alien race? Woo! Look at it go.
Forever, you say. Yeah. Uh-oh. Some are dangerous, however, and some don't even visibly manifest at all. Some artifacts or relics left behind are just like gravity wells that locally pull in and crush anything that passes them. Sure. This is why professionals are the guys that go into the zone, is because you can't just have actual tourists wandering in and, you know, being crushed into an inch wide cube by some invisible force.
Yeah, I don't think it's I mean, you'd be crushed into a singularity, right? Like, not even an inch wide cube. And I don't know if you're crushed as much as you're spaghettified for all time, I think is the technical term for crossing an event horizon.
I think that's actually true. The term is spaghettified.
Yep, spaghettification.
Yeah. Mom spaghettification. was the published paper.
He's weak, arms heavy, getting sucked in the black hole already. Spaghettification.
People in some zones are rumored to have mutated horribly, and after one man moved from a visitation zone to Detroit, he was followed by natural disasters and other events that doomed everyone in the city. People attempting to leave the zones are generally arrested or shot by security forces. The slang for these security guys are toads.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Is there a reason for that?
Probably their outfits. I think they wear dark green, as far as I know.
Oh, they have 10 toes, so they're toad.
Oh, yeah. It was the audiobook. Didn't see how it was written. You might be right. can't confirm. The main character, other than the Harmont Zone itself, is Redrick Red Shoehart, and he's 28 when the novel begins. He's originally a stalker. He would go into the Harmont Zone and recover artifacts, or swag, as they say in the biz. And to clean up his act, he eventually becomes a lab assistant at the Harmont Institute, working with a scientist from Russia named Kirill.
Was swag a joke?
Nope.
Okay. So it is Fortnite, is what you're saying.
I guess so. Well, Fortnite would be Roadside Picnic in this case, because Fortnite, it did come out after the 70s, from what I can tell.
No, I think books are a relatively recent invention.
Like, post-Fortnite?
I think post-Fortnite, yeah. They gotta be, right? I mean, Fortnite's the original video game.
So. I can't remember anything before, to be honest.
Before-Fortnite?
Yeah. Everything's post-night, you know?
Despite the fact that Kirill is his boss, Red comes to consider him a friend. Red is pretty surly. He's kind of like a struggling drunk, so I like him. And he's just kind of rough around the edges. You know, he's like a rough and tumble kind of guy who used to, you know, illegally smuggle alien artifacts out of a forbidden zone. So he's got a couple of calluses on his hands. Is that kind of guy. He's not moisturized at all.
He's one of those classic stories of, you know, the 17-year-old kid who hacked into MasterCard's data processing things just to reveal the exploit and prove that they could. And they're like, you know what? We're going to hire you.
Pretty much. Yeah, he's very much the ethical hacker of the zone. The two men study swag brought in from the zone in an official capacity now. The Institute has protective gear called spec suits and vehicles to assist them in the assist their recovery crews within the zone. They also have like planned routes to make sure that their stalkers and their technicians stay as safe as possible. So they've mapped out where you could be spaghettified is marked on a map and has like a little flag nearby to let you know that don't step there.
Sure, yeah. Don't lick this black rod because the infinite electricity won't shock you strongly, but it'll shock you forever.
It'll make you go blind for some reason. Shock you forever, yeah. Like the 9-volt battery feeling on your tongue
for the rest of your life.
That's awful. That would make you go mad.
Most things forever are just awful.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Eventually, automation would take the jobs and robot stalkers start getting sent out within the 8 years over the course of the novel.
Okay. Just like robots stole the jobs of salt of the earth cold calling salesmen. Now it's robo dialers. They took our entering dangerous exclusion zone jobs. Come on, robots, leave something for us.
Yeah, like not even the collection of evil alien slime is safe from automation in like the flyover zones. It's just like bunch of fucking eggheads. Kirill sees hope in the zone, what with all the infinite batteries and whatnot, and yearns for adventure within. He's never actually been into it up to the point of the book. Red is predictably jaded since he knows exactly how dangerous things can get within the zone and how like difficult it is just to recover like something the size of a AA battery. He does not find these things nearly as interesting.
Rookie, you don't understand. It might seem great, these magic artifacts from another star, but I tell you, once it starts spinning, it just doesn't stop spinning, okay? It goes forever, damn it! Twirling on your finger. You don't understand what it does to a man.
It's like a fidget spinner that never stops, basically.
Damn.
Our reference in history here is, of course, Fortnite and fidget spinners.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of which predate books.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it 2018, early 2018 right now?
This is legit our Russian literature episode, and we just can't stop bringing it back to Fortnite and fidget spinners.
Well, what else were we going to do? Name a better Russian novel. A more important one.
Brothers Karamazov.
Is War and Peace written in Russia?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's Tolstoy.
That's it, yeah.
Anna Karenina, Brothers Karamazov. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there. Russian literature is a big thing. Anton Chekhov. I mean, Chekhov's Gun, named for the guy. He was cut more of a playwright than a novelist, but...
Is Chekhov's Gun from Fortnite?
Yeah.
It's a new skin?
Yeah, yeah. It's anytime a player runs by and you're trying to just hide in a bush, your gun automatically fires itself.
I read all my Russian literature by sending it to Russian streamers and having them translate it to me through 100
bits, right?
Oh, all those imported Russian hot tub streamers, eh?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Let me tell you, War and Peace gonna cost you a lot.
Yeah, the world record break the world record for streaming. It's 21 hours straight in a hot tub.
Yeah, then you can edit it and clip it all together too, so it's just like a woman in different positions in a hot tub moving around, and you can get your story from start to finish, right?
Make it happen, internet.
The way Leo Tolstoy wanted it to be read, you know. By a text-to-speech bot while a woman's in a hot tub in the background
translating it. Yeah. So the main artifact that they reference in this section is called an empty. So, you know, they've all kind of got slang terms for what, because they're found by blue collar dudes. So they all have very kind of simple names.
This one I call a empty because there ain't nothing in it.
That's exactly right. Northern Ontario Harmont guy.
I'll take my 12.50 now, please.
Boreal Forrest Gump.
That is very good.
That's an excellent one. The empty is just two metallic discs that are floating 18 inches apart with nothing in between them. So the space between the discs is empty.
Like somebody licked all the cream out of an Oreo.
Yes, and just like an Oreo, the two pieces of cookie can neither be pushed closer together nor pulled further apart. They just float apart at a constant, unchangeable distance, exactly like a double-stuffed Oreo.
If this artifact, assuming it does nothing but remain at all times 18 inches apart from its counterpart, this is like a magician's wet dream, dude. Think about how many illusions you could pull off with this.
Yeah, you could just pass rabbits between it and impress the simpletons.
Pour milk into a rolled up newspaper in between the two discs. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. Kirill theorizes that if an empty exists, then so too must a filled empty, or optimistically, a half full, depending on who you ask.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Red Kirill and a newer stalker nicknamed Tender after his alabaster butt cheeks.
I'm going to assume that's not canon, but Loreboy's canon.
It is Loreboy's canon. All leave the Institute with spec suits and a vehicle slang, the slang for which is called the boot. It seems to be some kind of hovercraft that has, I think, a platform that goes up and down to keep the stalkers safe from the ground, because they disembark from the boot with ropes. There's like little rope ladders or like a rope.
You know,
yeah. To explain that.
You're familiar with the 5,000-year-old concept of rope, aren't you?
Yeah. Came out just after Fortnite.
I think it was actually made through Fortnite as ways to get up and around the buildings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, they'd had the grappling hook for years, but they didn't have anything to attach to it.
They just kept like whipping hooks over castle walls and they'd never get them back. People in the past were so fucking stupid, guys.
Not like us.
Exactly.
I do like the idea that they found these like two floating discs 18 inches apart, and they're like, the last expedition came back empty-handed. We need to go out and find the full now. Throw on your spec suits.
That's pretty much it. Like, Carol's been studying these things, and I don't know if it was just the name that gave him the idea, but like, at which point do you make the link that two floating discs with nothing but empty space in between them is like, well, they must hold things.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
What's the point?
That's crazy. That's absolute insanity. But
exactly. I mean, okay, man.
See, we don't just poke holes in the SCP episodes.
Yeah.
We also poke holes in this dumb idea.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what a full look like other than just a normal object that exists from one end to the other?
Yeah,
like,
that's just a they're describing a hamburger. Was he hungry?
A hamburger?
Lunchtime?
A rock? Yeah.
But surely you could fit a patty, a slice of cheese, lettuce, and a tomato in between these two floating plates.
Imagine it, Red. 18 inches of patties, right in between. Patties and American cheese.
Oh, yeah.
It must be out there.
They gotta stop building burgers up and start building burgers out, dude.
Well, now we're just getting back into the pizza discussion.
They're too thick. I don't want it like that way. Just give me a wider burger. Anyways.
Okay. You want some wide, not thick. You heard it here first.
Yeah. 18 inches, 18 inches is not enough for Jamie, is what you're saying. The spec suits themselves are highly advanced. They're built by the Institute, which is government funded, and are compared to diving suits or space suits. They have like a big transparent visor in the front. They're environmentally controlled on the inside. No chafing, you know, just filled with baby powder. no rubbing whatsoever.
You got the little, did you know that astronauts visors, you know, when you see like they look like gold when they like flip them down or whatever.
It's a second one, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's actually gold that they use for that like screen.
That's awesome.
Because it reflects radiation better. They're like radiation shields that like is the gold ones or whatever. That's why they flip them down.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
How dare you put an interesting fact into our stupid episode?
You put in the interesting fact about Deneb and Cygnus, the swan.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
And if you're ever in the forest, use a helmet with a Domino's pizza on the front so bear doesn't get you.
Bear doesn't like it. Bear doesn't want it. If you make the mistake of putting a Casa di Mama by Dr. Rucker in your back pocket, oh boy, you're going to get fucked up by some critters.
You're dead.
Okay, yeah. I'd love to imagine they've got, you know, that like compressed canister of like bear mace is just like Domino's pizza sauce. It just like scorches people's eyes.
Domino's turmeric ranch. Like, oh, thanks, Domino's.
Oh,
this will scare a bear away in 35 minutes or it's free.
Wait, when you have to schedule the bear.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, the bear calls you. The bear's ordering a pizza, Peter. Have you not been following?
Oh, yeah. I got you a pizza with extra bear. It's just a bear in a pizza box.
And the bear's like, you son of a bitch. Is it delivery or is it DiGiorno?
I wonder if they had that commercial in the States.
Probably. Maybe. Yeah, who knows? Is that it might be a Canadian thing, actually. Now that
I think it's Kraft makes those pizzas, is the thing.
Tell us. Kraft is definitely an American company now. I know
Delicio. Delicio's Canadian, DiGiorno is American. It's the same thing.
Oh, see, I nailed it, Pete.
Yeah, Delicio's too foreign for the Americans, so they changed it to DiGiorno.
I say that without looking it up with so much confidence. I don't know why I would know that. But
I mean, you got Louis Sicar right, so...
Yeah.
You got Louis Sicar right, and you're definitely right about why you build a burger so tall. So I think I'm pretty confident you're 3 for 3 here.
Yeah.
You're right.
Just one last thing about the spec suits here before we move on. They're also completely fireproof and rumored to be bulletproof.
Rumored.
Red Dinner Mom.
Just who's spreading these rumors? Like, hey, spec suits are bulletproof. Pass it on.
I think they're built that way and advertised as such, but it's funny you say that because Red's inner monologue when they're getting suited up states that fire and bullets are earth hazards and the zone doesn't have any of those. That's why they're rumored to be bulletproof. It's because you don't arm yourself in the zone unless you're a noob, because there's nothing there that you can fight. You can't fight. You can't shoot at gravity.
I mean, you can. I just don't think it's very effective.
Okay, fine. Sure.
I mean, your bullets are going to get spaghettified. Now you're shooting spaghetti. Who likes that? Italians. But who else?
Huh? Oh, man. I got too drunk last night. Yeah, couldn't get it up. Just shooting spaghetti. However, so the fact that the rumors are that they're bulletproof, and that there's just like defense against earth hazards, the spec suits do happen to defend against something called burning fuzz and something that seems to be like a spitting flower called a Satan's blossom.
They got a pill for burning fuzz now.
Oh, thank God. They didn't in the 70s.
Yeah, no.
Because that pill was introduced like in Fortnite.
It could be a buddy cop movie, too.
What was that?
Burning Fuzz?
Burning Fuzz, yeah. Buddy cop
movie. Hot Fuzz is one of the best movies ever made. I'm just going to throw that out.
Hands down.
Yeah. Less advanced gear that is seemingly always brought into the zones are just loose nuts and bolts. These are just tossed ahead of stalkers to check for any gravity or magnetic anomalies that could peel a person apart.
Sure.
It's their Hansel and Gretel breadcrumb trail. They just whip it in front of them, and if something fucked up happens to the screw, you just don't go that way.
Yeah. Fun thing about black holes is like everybody has like an image in their head of like what a black hole looks like, where it's like completely black, and then you have like the light event horizon around it. But like, because it's actually bending light, you would never actually see it. Like the light would just get bent around it, and any light that didn't get bent around it would get sucked into it and would never hit your eyes. So you actually wouldn't be able to see any kind of like thing ahead of you.
So a black hole, it's like a concept more than anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you go too close to one, Matthew McConaughey sees his kids age really quickly.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. And all your books fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, black holes just knock your books off your shelves.
Yeah.
It's not really that dangerous.
They knock your books off your shelves and they turn your corn crop bad.
I think that was the dust, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sure. If we're gonna now we're gonna start getting technical with it. Yes, you're right,
Peter.
It was the blight.
On the subject of films, actually, in the film, one of the things that does carry over in the zone that I understood because it doesn't need subtitles is whipping screws at shit. In the film, though, throwing screws at stuff in Russian, I'm just like, I don't understand this at all.
You wouldn't shoot at gravity, but you might throw nuts and bolts at it. Just the one rookie stalker who just brings the literal kitchen sink to throw ahead of him.
Tender.
Yeah.
In the film, though, they have little rags, like a rag tail tied to them so that they fly better and are more easily visible. That's not described in the book, but it's a good addition.
Because I don't know if you've ever thrown a nut in the... Thrown a nut. That's a good euphemism, too. I don't know if you've ever thrown a nut or bolt in the forest, but it's impossible to then find that nut or bolt.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like...
Whip it away. It's like, I don't think there's any black holes here.
Like, you'd never see it get like intercepted by anything.
Yeah, unless
like dust in the wind or like a nut in the forest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or like golf on TV before they, you know, got the little guys to draw the little orange spot on it as it flies through the air.
That's true. Yeah,
I'm trying to think of different ways to like detect a gravity anomaly like ahead of you. And the first thing that came to mind is everybody has like a stick on the top of their hat. And like some type of flag or like long string. So as
the wind would fuck with that. That wouldn't save you at all.
Yeah, well the wind would be pretty tough to deal with, but I think there's some problems here. We just gotta get around that wind thing.
I mean, yeah, you could do it with like just do like a big like piece of iron, right? On like a bendy stick.
Or that's two not gonna compasses. Get affected.
Two compasses. Two compasses? Hell,
that's just
held
magnetic anomalies, though.
Yeah. They'll both point towards it, right?
Two compasses held at exactly 18 inches apart.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to assume that the gravitic force of a localized black hole would override the magnetic fields.
He never said black hole, by the way. Like, we added that to it, but I think... It might just be a gravity place. I don't know what those are.
A gravity.
They are just they don't like suck you in from a distance. They do encounter one. Tender, Red, and Kirill do encounter one where they just kind of whip a screw past it and they just like redirect in the air and just get buried into the earth. So it's not like a black hole tornado or anything. It's just something that would probably just like crush all your bones if you walked past it.
Yeah, I mean, like
it would kill you.
Any black hole has an event horizon, like. We're not in danger of getting sucked into the mega colossal black hole at the center of our galaxy, but it is there.
Yeah.
Maybe like this gravity well, like if you go stand in the middle of it, you wouldn't feel like a 180-pound man. You'd feel like a 300-pound man if it was like a weaker one. Like it doesn't necessarily mean there has to be an event horizon. I don't know what
if
it
there's
is.
I don't know. Yeah. If there's a singularity, If we're crushing things to a single point, then it is. Then there's an event. If there's an event horizon, which is where light can't escape, then that's everything that I'm talking about. That's what I've been picturing in my head. But yeah, could be either.
Yeah, the anomalies in the book aren't well described, so you're both right.
I suppose it could be some sort of science fiction thing as well.
Well, let's not go too far.
Well, gravity well, huh?
But like on the subject of these things, like when you get killed in the zone by an anomaly, generally speaking, there is nothing left to bury. Towards the end of the novel, they encounter like piles of dust, and Red just assumes they're people that he used to know that he never saw again that had been sent into the zone. The men see and come close to a few anomalies. One is just a radio tower off in the distance covered in like shaggy fur.
It's 24-hour FM radio of Shaggy's greatest hits.
Yeah, other than the fact it's just Shaggy's greatest hits, Red notes that the Institute tried to harvest some for study at some point with like a winch on a helicopter.
Sure.
But the fuzz immediately started to grow up the metallic cable of the winch. So before it got to the helicopter, they just dropped it. So now the cable covered in fuzz is just hanging off of the metallic tower. Damn. And it has not spread to organic material. The fuzz grows exclusively just on the metal tower and on the hook and the cable.
I hate to bring it back to rope, but have they considered rope? Like hemp rope?
Shaggy'd probably appreciate that, honestly. Yeah, like all they've got all this like hemp military equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's got a loading capacity of 15 pounds. We're going to try and drag some fuzz off that radio tower.
The helicopter flying over just has, like, the loose hemp blades, like, yeah. Popping yeah. Around.
Like streamers.
Yeah, yeah. Hemp, bro, it's a miracle material, okay?
Yeah. You should eat it. It cures COVID.
No, it doesn't cure COVID. That's
It does not.
For legal reasons, that's a joke.
Yeah, exactly. We're all getting our vaccines. When this episode's out, Ethan and I are both going to be vaccinated. It's all good. Yes. The first location they try and get into within the zone is called the Garage, which is just that. They're just named after the landmark. Though it has been touched by the zone and contains a few anomalies. Along the way, the three men come across various things left behind by people who fled the zone. Some vehicles are rusted all to hell, whereas some are inexplicably in perfect condition, where... So some things in the zone seem to be going quickly forwards through time, whereas some are just like locked in at a fixed point when the visitation occurred. And they actually do manage to find a filled empty within the garage, and contained between the discs is not Oreo Jamie's stuffing. Dream burger or Oreo stuffing, but it's probably still pretty good.
18 inches is way too tall for Jamie's burger. I'm sorry to keep cutting you off, but come on. He likes them wide. Yeah. You like some wide, not thick.
I turn it sideways.
Jamie, you could just do that with one of those tall burgers. Turn it sideways.
Put the buns on the end.
Like. If you cut it lengthwise, it might be kind of like an open faced. It'd be like a steak sub, right?
Yeah. I'm ordering food tonight. Now I might have to get like some kind of burger and experiment, right?
You guys got a sideways burger that for delivery?
Take a burger, rotate it 90 degrees.
I'll just order from that same driver who brought me my pizza.
Yeah,
it'll be
folded in half
by the time it gets here.
The empty actually just contains like a thick blue syrup just like hovering between the discs. Just some kind of alien garbage, again.
Okay. Sure,
Red can also see and hear what seem to be like silver cobwebs, which are just kind of hanging between the filled empty, and the floor where it is sitting inside of the garage, but they're not actually connected to the empty itself. Kirill cannot perceive them, and when he's trying to help Red lift up the empty, he actually backs straight into these silver webs. He cannot feel them or detect them or whatever, and Red, when he sees him do this, is like paralyzed with fear, assuming that he would just be immediately whipped into pieces by whatever these threads were.
Sure.
That doesn't happen. Like, Red checks his back when they leave, they load the empty onto the boot, and they head back to the Institute. Even during decontamination in the showers, Red checks Kirill's back for any markings.
You always check your boy's back when you're in the showers. You
know what I mean? Yeah.
Always.
In case he touched a spider web.
Yeah.
That's gross. So nothing was there, and it left no trace on his body. However, hours later, Kirill mysteriously drops dead out of nowhere.
Yikes.
Yeah, just from coming into contact with the what is assumed from coming into contact with the silver webs.
Sure.
Losing his friend to the zone changes Red, so he returns to illegal stalkering in like later chapters of the novel, and is actually arrested for it after hiding some swag for his contact, who's a guy named the Vulture. Sure. His last name is Burbridge. Section 2 opens with both of them in the zone trying to leave, because Burbridge had gone in with him and had like fallen through some old floorboards and ended up nearly up to his knees in something called hell slime, which is one of the other kind of commonly referred to anomalies from the zone.
And is hell slime good or bad, Peter?
Well, it's really up to your interpretation. I'll tell you what it does, and then you guys can submit your Yelp review on hell slime.
Hell slime, okay. Good.
It's so you get a sideways burger, and then you get your hell slime, and it's not everybody's, not to everyone's taste, but we'll see if you guys are into it.
Not everyone likes turmeric ranch.
Yeah, it's like the beigest sounding thing I've ever heard of. It just sounds awful. The slime bubbles and churns and burns with a blue fire, like burning alcohol or turmeric ranch.
Sure.
However, the flames somehow make the area around them darker, so it is burning away light above the slime. The effect it has on the human body is a bizarre one. It actually dissolves Burbridge's leg bones completely, but not his clothing, or from what I can tell, his meat or his muscle in the book.
Okay.
So it does sound evil, but I can think, like, if you're working the night shift and all that sun's coming in through your window, a little bit of hell slime on the sill cuts that. Yeah. You don't even have to wear a mask.
Blackout
anymore.
Curtains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, mankind for thousands of years has tried to find ways to keep the sun out of their homes. But it's like, here it is, just sitting under some floorboards, ready to dissolve bones and help you out with that pesky light problem in the afternoon, you know? I get some terrible monitor glare. I'll throw it on the windowsill behind me, and suddenly I can do my work, read my, you know, periodicals. I can read Us Magazine online digitally in the afternoon when the sun's shining.
And if you're in the States, a home intruder could break in and burn themselves on it and then sue you for it, probably. But
yeah, it's not a stand your ground slime. So like if some guy gets his, when he's trying to crawl, like climb over the windowsill and his finger bones are all dissolved and all that's left over is like rubbery fingers, like a dish glove filled with turmeric ranch, I guess.
Oh, God.
Then that's just a lawsuit waiting to happen. So his legs are, the reason I say it doesn't seem like it's been burned away, it's because his legs are never described as being physically harmed in any way. They're just kind of rubbery, like Harry's arm in the second Harry Potter. Like his bones are just gone.
Right. He has bonitis. My only regret is having bonitis.
A complete impulse decision last night at like 2 a.m. I bought the Harry Potter Lego games on Switch because they were 75% off.
There you go.
Nice. I'm you excited. Having fun?
I haven't tried them yet. I went to bed. Okay. So, lot to look forward to.
I love that. The 2 a.m. I'm going to buy this, then go to bed.
I thought it was going to download fast, and it took an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Then it would be 3, and that's just way too late for a school night
to start a game. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
His legs, Burbridge's legs, are later just amputated and replaced with prosthetics from below the knee. So he's got 2 peg legs now.
Yarr.
Yeah. Hell slime is recovered by the Institute at some point, but just decides to cause an accident at some point and the complete loss of one of their labs. The slime just started to turn everything it touched into yet more slime.
Oh. But not Burbridge's legs.
No, just lost his bones.
Hmm.
Red like, and Burbridge.
Burbridge's legs was the domino pizza of legs. And the hell slime was
yes.
Like, no, thank you.
I gotta find that video
exactly.
Now.
The Domino's pizza of legs. Completely undesired, even by alien waste. The Domino's pizza won't even dissolve in acid. Like, not even the laws of nature want it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they certainly don't want us as a sponsor anytime in the future, so.
That's a pity. Yeah, exactly. I don't eat cheese. You don't eat meat. Jamie is just going to end up with, like, hundreds of Domino's pizzas in his house. No deer, though. Keep those motherfuckers out.
Yeah, I can't be trusted with that much pizza, dude. Don't let it happen.
Just slap some Domino's pizzas to your windows to block out the sun.
Yes. Oh, this is an elegant set of blackout pizzas you've got there. Yeah.
Domino's, the finest. I got the gourmet toppings, of course.
Are those stuffed crust curtains? Oh, they are.
Oh, that's so gross. Yeah, it, you know, like the weight at the bottom of your curtains to keep them not from moving.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. All jokes aside, I'm pretty sure now we're mixing metaphors because that's got to be Pizza Hut, right?
Oh, fuck, that's
four true. Four cheese hot dog stuffed crust is a God-blessed American Pizza Hut invention, okay?
Jesus, dude.
Do not besmirch their name by comparing them to Domino's.
Sorry. The crust might, is good.
We might still be able to get sponsored by Pizza Hut, so I'm hedging my bets.
In the video, guys. I found the video. Pizza Hut's there. I'll find the results later.
Oh, shit.
Okay, thank God. Yeah, we're going to the Institute for some science. Red and Burbridge had entered the zone looking for swag, naturally, but more specifically, they were looking for the Golden Sphere, which is an artifact that is said to grant wishes. This is another huge leap of logic, just like there must be a filled empty somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, because
there's this thing that doesn't grant wishes, that implies the existence of something that does. Yep.
So that's exactly what I wrote. It's like, especially considering there are seemingly random fucking effects everything else from the zone has, that was, I guess, the logic where it's like, look, I have made a wish on all of these things, none of them have come true, and there's one more fucking thing left in there. It's got to be the one.
It's got to be the wish one, you know?
Yeah.
Every single one does something unique, and every single thing has been done by one of these objects. You know how many sets of curtains I have that have bologna in the curtain at the bottom? You know, we got cheese in the curtain at the bottom. We have one stuff with pimento olives in the curtain at the bottom. It's like there's every kind of food in these curtains, but I can't get a wish granted.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just another one of the fucking things. The Golden Sphere eventually does become like the one more job Red MacGuffin for the latter half of the novel.
Sure.
The zone has a passive effect. So that's enough about swag. The zone itself seems to have a passive effect on the children of stalkers. They are mutated, but not always in bad ways. Burbridge's son and daughter, Arthur and Dina, are both described as being like remarkably almost unnaturally attractive, but looking nothing like either one of their parents. They're both like children of the zone.
Sure.
So Burbridge, this mob boss, this kind of like slimy dude, gets the hot son and daughter. He gets the hot son and daughter, and Red gets the Shapiros. Ugh.
Great feat,
Red. Oh yeah. Red does have a daughter as well with his girlfriend Guta, and they're not so lucky. She is still very young over the course of the book. She's born in section 0 and is, you know, 8 by section 4. She's nicknamed Monkey due to being covered in long, sleek, kind of glossy fur and having little beady black eyes with no pupil and no white.
Okay, like the kid in Jumanji.
Exactly like that.
Briefly.
Like yeah. The 12-inch steak and cheese.
Yeah.
A lot like, I can't even remember that guy's name.
12 inch steak and cheese, or as some would call it, a hamburger on its side.
Yeah. That's a long burger.
Well, I'm just telling you, Red, burgers stand upright, which presupposes the existence somewhere in the zone of a sideways burger.
I have no mouth yet. I must eat this tall burger. Or long burger,
or
whatever.
Or whatever, man. I don't know anymore.
What are we even talking about?
The difference between a tall burger and a long burger is only perspective, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
As Monkey ages, she actually becomes more animalistic and very creepily begins to scream in her sleep. Red's father has returned from the dead and now lives with him in Guta and Monkey, and seems to be able to understand Monkey's screams, and they kind of just like scream communicate with each other at night.
Sure.
It's awful. Like obviously this is all jokes here. That section of the book, especially with the actor they had do the novel that I was listening to, is truly disturbing.
Yeah.
Because the psychological toll that it takes on Red and Guta, that their daughter is like basically haunting their house at night with his dead father who's been reanimated is just a very, it's a very macabre scene. Like, it's pretty very, awful. Very creepy and uncomfortable.
Pretty yeah. awful. Nothing like roommates, too. Am I right?
Yeah, they're yelling at each other and everything, yeah. too. Jeez.
It's like, geez, I got work in the morning. God. Turn Netflix down, would you? Gotta have a white noise machine in my room just to cover the sound of them.
Well, he can listen to Hot Tub ASMR on Twitch.
True.
That'll drown out the screaming monkey. Get the little monkey child.
Get all of War and Peace while you're at it.
After years of automation and robot stalkers, the human side of the business has been driven deeper and deeper into organized crime. Burbridge has been hiring stalkers to map out a way to the Golden Sphere, and he uses like stalkers basically as a war of attrition with the Zone, so promising them vast quantities of money and even paying it out. But eventually, all of them die, so you never have to like pay that last paycheck. You can give it to some other dude who is going to make it five steps further towards the Golden Sphere.
Right.
Yeah. Red and Arthur, so that's Burbridge's son, yeah. decide to go into...
I was going to guess Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Sherlock Holmes books.
No, he died slightly before this book came out.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes, sorry.
Slightly after Fortnite.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. He is also not a fictional character from a Russian novel.
Oh, true.
Okay.
Well, yeah. All Sherlock Holmes novels exist within the Stalker universe, yeah. obviously. Within the novel of Roadside Picnic is where all of those novels were written.
Like a hamburger on its side, I choose to believe that everything you say is a matter of my perspective, Peter.
Of course.
I'm getting caught up in the memes. What is actually going on in the story right now? We have two people, and they found the filled thing, and we moved on from the filled thing.
They're going to find the golden apple, which grants wishes, at the golden behest sphere. Of Berberist. Okay. Who is a crime lord who is hiring Lost people to do it because I guess he doesn't want to pay robots because the government is paying robots. I don't know.
Well, it's not actually a book report summary of the novel. I'm covering just different subjects that like kind of developing the subjects within the story itself, which is why it's nonlinear is what we're talking here. I do apologize if you're lost, but Burbridge lost his legs to the hell slime, which is why I included that there. He can't do it himself. Automation drove human stalkering into the world of organized crime, which Burbridge is kind of the kingpin of.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. So it's not your storytelling, it's our garbage in the middle that's confusing me.
Yes. It's all these curtain rods full of pimento cheese. That's what I mean.
Red and Arthur, who I mentioned earlier is Burbridge's hot son, bring a hot air balloon with them on their expedition. This is like the one last job for the Golden Sphere because now they know where it is.
They bring a hot air balloon.
Yeah,
they're trying to get around the globe in 80 days. Why a hot air balloon?
They figure the Golden Sphere is going to be hard to carry, so it's there to help them. And since they're doing this on the illegal side of things, they can't bring a robot or a boot with them.
Yeah. Well, like a helicopter?
You could roll it, frankly, but...
All the party buses were busy with Fortnite, so they had to...
There you go.
I mean, the party bus is technically just a hot air balloon, because it's held up by balloons, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's Fortnite technology they were using.
Oh, shit, right? That's why. They knew that the precursors had it right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, they bring in the hot air balloon, which is just like the easiest way, I think, for them to smuggle it in, because, of course, a air balloon needs to be inflated, so once it's collapsed, it's easier to transport. And he has to transport it on his back in a backpack.
Okay.
Arthur, during their trip, makes the good point that the sphere is probably smooth and wonders how they're supposed to hook the fucking thing up, but Red kind of just ignores him, because he's just like, oh, whatever. He's too jaded at this point.
Sure.
Red, on the other hand, has been completely numb to the zone and knows that through trial and error, someone needs to be given to an invisible force to get to the sphere.
Right.
So that's why he's brought a companion with him. He's normally like, ooh, I work alone sort of thing, but he knows that somebody needs to go ahead of him.
Okay. Yeah.
The men encounter some kind of heat-based anomaly that for whatever reason does not burn their clothes away. It kind of hurts them through their clothes. Red tells Arthur not to move, but he panics, like angering the anomaly because they weren't being harmed before Arthur freaked out. Mm-hmm. Another is a swamp, like it's kind of like a swamp, like pool of goo that is not hell slime that is protected by seeming like this electrical fence that like arcs between these black rocks. Both these anomalies seem to have been combined in the Metro series that we mentioned earlier, which also features like these roaming balls of lightning that kill things that move. So if you move when one is in the area, it will just insta-kill you.
It's an alien bylaw. If you put up a slime pool, you got to put an electric fence around it so the kids don't
Yeah.
It's no running by the slime pool. That's
or else you get electrocuted.
Yeah.
Finally, when the men come to the sphere, Arthur runs off towards it, kind of, he's like entranced, or he's celebrating, or he's just happy that he found the golden sphere for his father, and he is just loudly shouting a wish as he runs up to it, because, you know, you got to make sure that the sphere can hear you, or it might like mishear you and give you a sideways hamburger instead of happiness for all mankind.
Yeah.
which is what Arthur starts wishing for.
Sideways hamburger, happiness for at least one man in all of
mankind. Red, of course, did not warn Arthur about this final anomaly, which is lovingly called a meat grinder. Arthur is lifted up and twisted in like a wet rag in like several unnatural little chunks. Red like notes that he watches one of Arthur's boots with his foot in it just get launched up into the sky as he's being crushed into nothing.
Sure.
Or just pulled apart or whatever it is. Red's intent was to wish for his daughter to be cured of her monkey curse, but watching Arthur get killed by the meat grinder kind of leads him to believe, like, no, this kid wasn't so naive. I should just wish for happiness for all mankind. So after Arthur is killed, Red approaches the sphere yelling the exact same wish, which is happiness for everybody, free, and may no one be left behind. And then the novel ends. It is never confirmed whether Red is pulled apart by the meat grinder, makes it to the sphere, or if it even grants wishes.
And he, right. I mean, if it succeeds, now he's happy that his daughter's a monkey. Why didn't he just try wishing on her paw, though? First, I mean, before going to all this trouble.
The ironic consequences, he'd have to ground her forever.
Now my daughter's too hot. You're grounded, Missy.
Well, actually, she would have been ground forever if he just would have wished her that she became better, because she would have been sent into the meat grinder, right?
Oh, right,
ground
right.
forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's Roadside Picnic. That's cool. Some of the anomalies, the setup for the novel, like a kind of a brief summary of it. I had a lot of fun listening to it. Had a hell of a lot more fun talking about it. But yeah, so that's Roadside Picnic. That was a request, I think, from Saucy or someone else on the Discord. But if you want to suggest a topic for one of our episodes, please, theloreboys.com/about. Everything important is there, including the Discord, where we have our lore requests channel. And I have been your host, Peter O'Donohue. You can, of course, find me on Discord or check out the old Instagram, which is at loreboyspodcast.
Yeah. I've been your co-host, Ethan Palmer. Do check out the loreboys.com/about page. Send us emails if you want to have questions read by us. We're going to do a mailbag at some point in the near future. We're all kind of busy these days. Lots of stuff going on in our personal lives, but we're going to get to it in the next, you know, a while, let's say.
Ethan's getting married. I have the Burning Crusade coming out soon.
Exactly,
we
all got stuff going on, man. You're taking more time off for the Burning Crusade than I am taking off for my wedding. So, by like double and then some.
I have a lot of vacation saved up, dude. I'm not even taking half of my vacations.
Holy fuck.
Do you want to plug anything other than your vacation, James?
Yeah, you can find me on Steam at JAYMILK. Get into the Discord. Go to loreboys.com/about and get into the
Jesus.
We'll fix it in post. If you guys want to send us some emails and have your stuff read on air, that's contact@loreboys.com or loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. And if you guys want to support the show financially, like Peter said at the top of the show, where he is really trying to do more for the patrons, which good on you, Pete. But you can go to patreon.com/theloreboys. All the info's there. We have several tiers, whatever makes sense for you. And we super, 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 super appreciate everybody who's done it. It's like we got our golden sphere and you guys have granted all our wishes.
And a special shout out on Patreon actually to Darkside Bunny, who I guess came in some money he clearly didn't need, because he increased his tier from the $9 to the $15. So thank you very much, sir.
Shout out. Yeah, and anybody who doesn't trust Patreon, of course, we have Lore Boys Prime, something we've had from the beginning. We've been shooting a lot of spaghetti at the wall out of our spaghetti gun here to try and come up with ideas for this one. Unfortunately, we did kind of get caught up in some pizza debates. So we have a bunch of, let's say, what's the polite way to say, pizzas half eaten by raccoons that we want to give to people and expect them to pay for, fellas. You know, the stuffed crusts are getting a little rank at this point. The raccoons love to suck out the hot dogs of the crust, let me tell you. But we're giving them away. We're giving them away to the first 10 listeners who write in and say, give me free pizza, please. Of course, we're giving them away for free. All you have to do is send us $62, and we'll make sure to process your request for the free pizza. You're not paying for the pizza. Mind you, it's pizza's free. You're paying for the right to be considered in the draw for the pizza, which is free, of course. So $62, make sure to send it. And we'll if you're the lucky winner, we will send you a sad pizza with the hot dogs sucked out of the crust by raccoons. I think that constitutes
that it. Constitutes
Lore Boys.
That institutes.
That IIETC's a Lore Boys A. International Institute of Extraterrestrial
Cultures.
Yeah.
Curtains.
Mics are hot.
Oh god. That was the worst.
Okay. My name's Ethan. Jamie might have large genitals, Pete might have large thighs, but my genitals are just too cold.
I'm James, and I'm waiting for some jeans, but the Porch Pirates and the curse of the black denim is out there trying to steal my jeans.
James is jetting some jeans this geekend.
Jaffer G-Jets is Jaxine. My name is Peter. I'm going to take a leak after this test, and hopefully it doesn't affect my audio quality.
Hope not.
I think once I drain the lizard, my voice might get a lot higher.
Yeah, it just gets higher. It doesn't get louder, though, so you're fine.
Okay. Oh, that's true. That's the thing. Hey, guys, I finally relieved myself.
Hey.
Been holding that in all day.
That's how they fill up helium balloons. They just have a guy. They have a guy breathing out while he pisses.
They have one of those drunk party clowns who smells like whiskey peeing into balloons.
We're on the way. Keep an eye out. But then if you click on tracking, it says it's going to show up on Saturday.
So what are they walking them there themselves? Yeah, yeah.
They show up on Saturday and there's just a desiccated Jamie on his stoop waiting for his jeans to go. You're dead, yeah. Sir.
They're in the delivery guy's laundry. They'll be dry this weekend.
There's also the lady who walks her cat upstairs, and she's kind of known for taking people's packages.
Oh. So
I just went banging on her door and like looking around to be like, hey, have you seen something? And